Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making for his back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Maddon, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal.
Huambu nu karibu quanteleo lingi luk lovers cast. Huni Dave, nana Maginishwa, na Ian, na Sheridan Robbins. Wa BBC Somerset, ambaya nasi bila ben. Habari zasubi, nioto wa willi nemendiliaja. That introduction was brought to you by Google Translate, with apologies to anybody who can actually speak Swahili, but also in honour of Yeovil Town's two-goal striker, Adi Youssef, and here to join me, as you probably picked up, the only words that I actually pronounced correctly in that introduction there were Ian, Sheridan Robbins, BB Somerset, Ben, and Glover's cast, which if you put them in the right order means that I'm joined by Ben and Sheridan, because Ben can't, no, yeah. I'm joined by Ian and Ben. The English bit I'm struggling with, not the Swahili. I'm joined by Ian and Sheridan because Ben can't be here because he's getting his COVID booster this morning. So with no further ado, good morning, Ian, and good morning, Sheridan. I got everyone's name right there. Fantastic.
Good morning. And cracking effort there. Excellent.
If anybody can actually speak Swahili, you can tell me how many words I got right there, because Google Translate, I'm not convinced, speaks Swahili very well. Probably worse than me, I would have thought. But I did promise, didn't I? So there you go.
You did.
Christmas promise has to be kept.
You always deliver.
There you go. There you go. But yes, in honour of Adi Youssef, and we've got the two of you because the two of you were freezing your whatevers off at Hewish Park whilst I was sat listening to Sheridan and Lawson talking all about it, which is very pleasant, I have to say. So, So Ian, you were on the Thatcher's end yesterday, I understand.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. Not in Block H.
No, Block H was shut. I was getting my steps in, jumping around on the Thatcher's Terrace. Enjoyed
were
it.
Were you actually jumping around?
Yeah, I was trying to stay warm.
Oh, right, okay, right. This was survival, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, there. No, I mean, yeah, all the goals were in front of me, so that was quite good. It was nice to see goals up close. It was a good afternoon stood up, really.
I have to ask, because I can't remember, it'd be a long time ago since I last saw a game from the side of a pitch as opposed to at the end of a pitch. What is the big difference between seeing it from the end of the pitch? Is it just you see the goals better? Do you get a better view? I read all these comments on Facebook last night with people saying, oh, you can't watch a game from the end of the pitch. Why would anybody do that?
Yeah, I do prefer watching. I do prefer watching from the side.
You get a better view, do you?
Yeah, you can see more. You can see, like, I don't know. You just, you, everything's a bit more in perspective.
Yeah.
I got
you don't
no
get
idea.
My excuses.
Yeah, I got no idea.
Oh, I can't see all the way at the end
there. I got no idea how far Alex Bradley's shooting from when I'm at the end of the pitch.
It was far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex Bradley shooting from far, yeah. Not Dale Gorman.
Well, yeah, both of them had their goes, didn't they?
Yeah, they were both at it.
Would We just take Dale Gorman as a given now, do we? That he's just going to shoot from anywhere. I did notice that in your commentary, Sarah. I can't remember whether it was you or Lawson. Lawson said something about, I just love that Dale just shoots from anywhere.
he said one day he's going to score an absolute worldie.
Hopefully
by the time that happens, Lawson's back on the pitch. But yeah, he certainly likes to take the mick out of his teammates on commentary, doesn't he?
He does. But I guess we should start off, because right at the beginning, you asked him about his return to training, which maybe I overestimated what the manager said, because he definitely said in his pre-match comment, it was good to have Lawson back in training as well. But God, what was it he was actually doing?
So I think he's been in and around, I think, for a while. But sort of off air, he said, I think the gaffer over-egged it a little bit. I think I passed the ball once. Yeah. So certainly wasn't back in training, but it's positive. Every time I speak to him, his recovery is in the right track. And he knows a lot about the players in terms of what they've been working on in training. He's in the dressing room before. He comes a bit later to join commentary because he's in and around the action. So, he's well on his way. He's well on his way. And I think potentially end of January, early Feb is his target, whether that does happen. You know, it was a bad injury, so he's very conscious not to sort of raise expectations, because anything can happen, can't it, with that kind of injury and set you back. But really positive news that, you know, he's kicking a football with that kind of injury. That is a big step.
I think what a player he'd be to have back as well.
It would be, but it'll be disappointing to lose him on commentary, I think, as well. Where does his strength lie?
I think when he finishes the game, he should become a referee's assessor. That's what he should do. He's just sit there, because he's already getting the work in, and he's doing the work experience.
Did you hear how proud he was that he waited until 20 minutes to complain about the referee?
I was going to say, let's have a quick rule one break just to find out what he said about the referee, because, again, it was an interesting performance.
Yeah, and it started off better because the game was at least flowing, unlike last week, which was just the most difficult game to commentate on because there was just no flow. But this time, it was the yellow cards, as the manager said afterwards, just ridiculous yellow cards. And 50-50 tackles, certainly not being treated as 50-50. So he was getting very, very frustrated at the yellow cards.
But you wound him up, Sheridan, because you said something. You said something about, the referee, just like the one last week. And he went, yeah, like that one last week. And then you said the red mist descend in front of him. And then he went,
got to give the people what they want, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome complaining about the ref.
He was good. He was good value again. But I mean, it sounded like the cliche of a game of two halves. The first half sounded like it was probably more in favour of Woking, but not a very good game. Well, apart from the goal. The goal sounded, I don't think they do any highlights of the FA Trophy, so I haven't seen, but it sounded like Tavon Campbell's was a good goal.
He took it really well. I think the most disappointing thing, though, was it started from our free kick. And we completely switched off. And when Tavon Campbell was one-on-one with a goalkeeper, it's only going to go one place. Mm-hmm. And it was frustrating because he didn't do much else throughout the game. Again, we were able to nullify that player that scored, 14 goals this season. So it's a great tally. No, take nothing away from him. Took it well. And I think Woking probably just edged the first half. Certainly in terms of chances, we just didn't come out the traps like we normally do. And probably something to do with the changes we made, but yeah, he took it really, really well. But I think their biggest problem was they shut up shop, which was a bad thing to do against this kind of Yeovil Town side.
I don't know what you thought from the side angle, but it felt like they were trying to expose a new signing, Jaheim Headley-Heedley, and that gap in between, because they had a chance just before Campbell scored. They had a chance from a similar position that they hooked wide, so it almost. I think they targeted that left side and that space in between Heedley and Hunt to capitalise on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in the first sort of 20, 30 minutes it worked, but I think we adapted quite well. I thought he had a great debut, Headley. I thought, considering coming in, Lawson said he was not even trained. He signed yesterday, so it was impressive in terms of a back four. He got beat a couple of times, but I think once he got into the game, certainly past the half hour mark, he looked really strong. But you're right, they were trying to expose that, and we didn't have the wits, did we, to counter that in that first half, I don't think, which has been our strength for so many weeks.
Yeah, he definitely grew into it. Like, I thought in that second half when we were chasing the game, sort of him and Barnett on the left hand side were like brilliant together. I thought
he's quick, sure,
powerful as well, and just getting round the their fullbacks. He had a really a good debut, and what was he, 20 years old? So another youngster thrown into the deep end.
Yeah. Is he definitely a fullback then, is he? Because I noticed in the sort of write-ups on him, it said about he can play in defence and midfield. Is he a bit like a Jordan Barnett, that he is a fullback, but he can play further forward too?
I think so. I think in a Darren Style team, you've got to be able to play at least two positions, haven't you? And with that sort of pace, I think it works as a fullback and in midfield. I liked, as Ian said, having him and Jordan there. Jordan didn't look rusty at all, and those two together were a big part of, you know, the second goal. So I imagine maybe we'll chop and change that if he does stay any longer, sort of than the month. Feel for Morgan Williams, because very impressive, but he was you can tell that going forward Morgan Williams isn't a left back, whereas with Headley he had that pace to burst forward.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't have scored, you know, two of the goals we scored yesterday, probably wouldn't have scored with Morgan Williams in the team, just because he wouldn't get in those positions to create those situations. So I think, we saw the benefit yesterday of having a player like Headley, left-back, rather than Morgan Williams.
Yeah, he is very comfortable on the ball, though, isn't he, Morgan Williams? Whenever you see him, there were a couple of occasions in that Stevenage game, I remember seeing him going forward with the ball. And like you say, he's not one who's going to burst down a wing and bang a crossing, is he? But he's very, very comfortable on the ball. But yeah, so first half was finding each other out as much as finding the opposition out. So did we probably deserve to be a goal down at half time?
I don't think we didn't create much. No. I felt like, it was. Obviously, everyone's talking about the return of Ruben Reid, but we didn't play to his strengths. It was a lot of sort of lumping the ball up, and he just couldn't get it under Dave. He just couldn't get it under control.
I don't know why you're so harsh on him all the time, Ian. He's trying his best, for crying out loud.
So I don't know. It just didn't just quite click at all, really, in the first half. And I think Max Kretschmar got a lot of time on the ball, and I was really impressed with him. I thought he looked an absolute player, but in the second half, nothing going at all for them in the second, really, and it was just a matter of time before we scored a goal, I think. And obviously Adi Youssef, probably still asleep at the moment, came
sleeping
on
and, through till Boxing Day now.
He came on and changed the game.
Yeah. But Kretschmar, you messaged, didn't you, at half time saying that he was he impressed. And then they took him off, didn't they?
Yeah.
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 Utterly bizarre. I've been impressed with him for the last couple of seasons. Every time we've played Woking, he is that playmaker. And I feel for him because he's clearly not in a good team currently. He's strong. He's creative and he doesn't stop running. I couldn't believe it when they took him off, but that's what I meant in terms of they shot themselves in the foot. As much as we stepped it up, and as Ian says, it was inevitable. Although all the three goals were late on, we'd had chances before that. We were going to equalise at least. But to take him off was just bizarre. I did watch their managers or their assistant managers post-match, so there may have been an injury, which would explain it, although he didn't look like he was injured from where he was playing. But we did silence him in the second half. He's certainly a bright spark and probably deserves to have better players around him.
I think you could tell they really started to slow things down. I think their left winger spent a couple of times sat on the pitch. He sat down for a little bit, like right on the edge, and then he got back up again after having treatment and came back on, and then he got a little bit further on the pitch and then sat down for a few minutes waiting for treatment, and then the goalkeeper took a bit of a tumble and needed emergency treatment on his ankle, which, I mean, the physio was a miracle worker yesterday. I think he fixed so many broken bones. And suddenly, you know, when we scored our equaliser, the keeper was a little bit quicker to get the ball and start, you know, get the game going again. It was, you know, and that was between 60 and 70 minutes that they started, you know, started those antics.
I was going to say, we can't talk too much about antics, can we? We've got a fair few antics in us. But I did chuckle when I heard about the goalkeeper, because you hear all these opposition fans talking about us and saying, oh, it's a disgrace, you should be banned. And the Del Gorman one from the Barnet game where he went down saying, oh, he should be ashamed of himself. Every team does it. Every team, whether you're a good team, whether you're a bad team, every team does it. Wrexham fans from the other week where they were talking about Dan Moss, their player, Ben Tozer was doing it all the way through the game, throwing himself on the floor like that. Every team does it. And sounds like Craig Ross, was it? The Woking keeper?
Yeah.
He's got a bit about it as well. Debs Curtis posted a picture of him on with the beautiful purple haze behind, and I did reply to her, say, oh, thank God the Woking keeper's alive. It sounds like he's really been through the wars, but yeah, she said, oh yeah, he's definitely alive and kicking him. So but yeah, so was it the arrival of Adi Youssef that really turned it, do we think?
I think so, but also Jordan Barnett made a difference as well. And this is no disgrace on Luke Wilkinson. Luke Wilkinson is Luke Wilkinson, and I always want him in the side, but he was on a yellow card. And I think he's played a lot of football recently, but getting Josh Staunton back just made us a little calmer. And although we played centre-back rather than in that midfield role, which I think he is much better in, we just looked stronger. And when you've got that defensive line, which we worked so hard for, we have a little bit more freedom to go forward. So I think all the changes really made a difference. But I do feel for Ruben Reid, because he didn't get that service in the first half. And he is definitely getting up to match fitness. I mean, we've had this same conversation about Adi Youssef, that, you know, he wasn't at match fitness. And I think people sometimes mistake that for, you know, not trying. But we've seen how Adi Youssef has come on. He doesn't stop running now. Now he's got his match fitness. So I think it was good that we got 60 minutes in Ruben. And, you know, Adi Youssef is on fire, so he's pushing Ruben Reid for that starting place, which can only be a positive thing. But, you know, Adi took his goals very well. He took them very well. And, you know, he wanted that poacher in the box, and that's what he was like yesterday. And a header from Tom Knowles, which I had to do a double take, though I was hitting the right player. So, yeah, no, we took the chances when they came, and we were patient because we played much better in the second half. But it obviously took a little bit longer than perhaps we would have liked to get that equaliser. But Staunton is a huge player, because he certainly rallied the troops. And, you know, from speaking to Adi Youssef afterwards as well, whatever Darren Sells said really worked, because they upped the intensity in the second half.
I think, yeah, it was noticeable how we got the ball down a lot more and actually started playing. And Alex Bradley, there was a couple of moments with Moss, Bradley and Sonny and Tom Knowles, just triangles, all the trigonometry around the box and down the lines. And yeah, we really started playing, and it did feel like a matter of time before things opened up. And then I think it was a triangle with Sonny and who was it who set up Youssef's first? Crossing from Headley, wasn't it? And then,
yeah, I think it was Headley, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a little triangle. Headley whips it in, and a bit of a loose first touch, but his finish was unreal with his left foot, you know, to just smash it in the bottom corner. And it's the type of finish that we were crying out for in October, that now we're getting. And I think we talked about him sort of not needing time to think about what he's going to do, and both of his goals, well, as his second goal yesterday, he did have time to think about it, and he was composed, and I mean, he just hit it really hard, which is all you want to do, really, I think. But we saw two sides of his goal scoring yesterday: the reactive, instinctive finish, and the I've got time to think about this and put it away. So it's a very different Adi Youssef to the one who clattered into Boreham Wood defenders and got sent off in October.
quite a wrecking ball now. I was going to say
he's still the wrecking ball. He is still that. Yeah. Like I put it in my conclusions how he causes absolute chaos, and it's just the way he. I don't know. He just runs around and clumsily bumps into people, but gets away with it. Whereas, like Ruben,
cleverly or clumsily.
Well, a bit of both, I think. It's almost like innocent. It's like, he doesn't know any better, but he probably does.
Gonna say he's been around long enough to know better.
Whereas, Ruben Reed is a physical striker who tries to get the ball and hold it up and sort of hold off defenders. Whereas Adi Youssef just wants to bump off of defenders and just cause reckless chaos, really.
And that's no mean feat with how big Woking's defence is. They're huge. It's unbelievable. And that's a credit as well to Sonny Blue at Everton, who I thought had another good game. Really strong with the ball at his feet and just able to go past defenders. I mean, the height difference is ridiculous. The stature difference was ridiculous. But that quality really showed through. And he's proved me wrong because I wasn't sure he was quite ready for this kind of physical league. But he's really stepped up and, he played a part in the goals. And I actually thought he was good in the first half, but wasn't really getting the rub of the green. So when he laid the ball off, there was no one there to anticipate. Whereas in the second half, as Ian says, those triangles really worked. And he was a big part of all of those.
He's definitely adapted to this level. I think the manager said early on he sort of kept the ball a bit too long. Whereas I think it's noticeable how much quicker he is to move it on. And I think there were moments yesterday when we were playing those triangles where it was sort of one touch, two touch football, and it was really slick. It was great to watch.
So do we think that, because we talked about what kind of a striker Adi Youssef is, and those Solihull fans we spoke to said that he was an instinctive finisher who wouldn't do a lot off the ball, but he'd always be in the right place. And that's what we thought we were going to get. And then we thought, he is a back-to-goal striker because he's, like you said, he does put in all the work. And now he seems to be, has he lost the back-to-goal bit to become the instinctive striker, or is he kind of mixing it up a bit?
I think he is both, but I think a lot of it is the coaching that he's receiving. I don't think he can get away with being that instinctive striker and nothing else. Mm-hmm. I don't think Darren Sall allows that in his team. Speaking to him, he said the training's really intense. He is different to, say, Ruben Reed, and that's probably a good thing. And I think he's also different to Joe Quigley, but I think he's adapting his game to the situations that he finds himself in. Particularly being so instinctive as a sub, he knew when he came on, he had to be the one that was going to change the game and turn it around for us and be that instinctive striker. You know, when you've got 30 minutes, you've got to make the most of it. Whereas when he plays the full 90, he's got so much more to his game. He's back defending, he's winning the ball back in midfield. He doesn't mind laying it off to, say, Sonny to create something and then moving forward. So I think he's adapting to the coaching that he's receiving, and we're seeing the benefits of it. And it's probably, a different role for him, particularly to come on with 30 minutes to go and have to change it. He knew he'd have to score. Whereas, last week he had that one chance and then he helped get the win. He just helped get the 3 points rather than creating loads of chances going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how he has evolved over his time with us. Like, he has become while he plays the same, he's just become a different type of player. And I think it is all about those relationships with the people around him. I think he seems to be playing a lot better with the people as they've all got used to playing with each other. He came in when we were playing 4-4-2. Now we're playing 4-3-3. And I feel like he thrives off having players a little bit closer to him, because it felt like when he was paired with Quigley, it was sort of Quigley flick-ons and him having to chase onto it, whereas having two people running off of him in Knowles and Sonny, who have, they're pacey and they cause havoc as well, I feel like it's freed him up a little bit more to be less of a defender's focus. When you've got all that movement around you, he's able to be like sort of a distraction and freed up by defenders because they're dealing with other runners. And I think the first goal yesterday was an example of that. He was held sort of tight by a defender, but not tight enough. And that was because there was runners behind him, there was runners in front of him, and he put it away lovely.
Yeah, it's been spoken about, hasn't it? About, well, not just about Youssef, I know Quigley as well, about how these are players that just needed a home and all the rest of it. And I was having a look through what Adi Youssef's sort of playing career has been for the last few years. And I mean, he started 12 games for us since he arrived in August, which is the most games he started since he played for Solihull in 18-19, when he played like 41 games. But I know he was banging him in from then. So it does genuinely, and I know it's a bit of a cliche saying that, you know, that he's found a home and all of that, but it does genuinely seem like, give him a run of games and he'll score. I noticed there was an interview in the non-league paper this morning about Tavon Campbell saying the same thing. He'd been on so many loan spells. All he wanted was games to be able to get goals. And Adi Youssef say the same. I mean, he's got, well, before us, he was, so Chesterfield loan, Wrexham loan, Bournemouth loan, Solihull loan, Blackpool in Signford, but he didn't play. And then he had loans before that as well. So maybe he does just, you know, need a home to find the goals, and he certainly seems to be doing it. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, and people have always found problems with strikers, weren't they? I'm on talk, but but it is amazing to think, given the actual squad that we've got, how many options we seem to have. Because you think to yourself as well, you've got Quigley still to come back in January, then you've got I know he's talked about Mark Little and not Lawson just yet, but you've got those kind of players still to come back, and you just think the numbers we've got, it feels weird to think we feel like we've got lots of competition for places, don't we, even though we've hardly got any players.
Yeah, it was weird yesterday when the team came out, it's like, that's five changes.
Yeah.
How are we able to make five changes? And you're thinking, okay, it's still a really decent team. I think we have decent options. That's the difference. I think the signings have been good, and the, you know, there's been a couple of loans that obviously haven't worked out, but even the loan, you know, the loan signings that have been made, I mean, Dan Moss again, he's so consistent, just so strong, never puts a tackle wrong, just a fantastic player that's going to go on to great things. It's strange that we have all these options but such a limited amount of players, you know, available. And, you know, if as Darren said after the match, you know, if a couple do go out down with COVID, then we won't be able to play. But on Adi Youssef, I thought it was interesting in his post-match interview that he did speak about the team so much. And I know players, you know, they say all these things, don't they, in post-match interviews. But his mantra throughout his career has been no goals, no sleep. But that's about him. Whereas he was very much focused on the team, and, you know, credit to Ruben Reid as well, having been in and around the squad throughout this season. He is there every match. He's there helping, you know, Adi Youssef. I think they're very close. So I think there is that tight-knit group that they all wanted the players to get a chance. And I think it was great for Alex Bradley to get 60, 70 minutes, whatever he got yesterday. And that competition helps anyone. And as Lawson always says, I wouldn't get in this team at the moment, which is, you know, a great place to be.
Yeah, there's a hell of a spirit in this team. I think we've been quite fortunate because we've been winning games, like going in front, whereas yesterday was a game where we went behind and we did have to show something a little bit different. And I think come the end, when that third goal went in, although it felt like, you know, it felt like it was coming and it felt like we were going to put them away, I think it was almost like a realisation of how close these players are. The celebrations for that third goal were brilliant. All the supporters, you know, there was a load of kids there yesterday all running down to the front, and it felt like it felt like quite a nice moment with supporters and the players, even though there was so few there. I think it was a perfect game to have a load of kids go free because, you know, these games over Christmas that are at home, we've got Weymouth, we've got Torquay. I think they'll pull people in anyway if they go ahead and if people are allowed in them. But, you know, that you know, a 3-1 win when the kids all go is a brilliant, you know, advert for the Yeovil Town Football Club. And, you know, it reminded me of when I used to go as a kid, you know, because it was great football. We won. It was good. It's weird to feel that.
It was that never say die attitude. And if you remember, Dave Lawson was like, you seem nervous, because at 2-1 I was thinking, oh, yeah. I thought, it's just, this team never gave me any reason to be nervous. But
no.
One, we weren't under pressure, but it's the, you know,
PTSD the
years
from
years
the years, yeah.
Yeah, but we do. We look so comfortable when we're in front. And that's what I was, as you said, so impressed with yesterday, because I thought, well, we haven't been behind in a long time.
Yeah.
And these are young lads, even, you know, new lads that have come in. But the spirit is unbelievable. And I was speaking to my dad about this, that this feels better than year one under Darren Sahl. And I can't quite put my finger on why, but Dad sort of said, because we're young, we're quick, we're fearless, you know, whereas we were so experienced in year one, and year one was fantastic and loved every player there and they were playing for the shirt and all that kind of thing. But yeah, it is. And also when they celebrate, as they did for the third goal, you're saying the kids running down, they're like kids, aren't they? We've just scored a third goal, you know, in the FA Trophy, we've come back. Last 10 minutes, it's that never say no, and they're loving it as well. They're enjoying it. They've never really been through this. Whereas year one, Yeovil Town under Darren Sahl, you know, they're very experienced. They've won things, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's why it feels so special this time.
Yeah, and I think because of that experience that we had in year one and the fact that we just come down from the league, there was a lot more expectation for us to perform like we did. Whereas this year, I mean, I've got exactly what you've got, Sheridan. I still don't believe anything good can ever happen to me. So, you know, I feel like footballing-wise, all the good things in my life have happened already, and therefore I'd just be grateful for those. So I'm still of the belief, well, if we don't go down, I'll be happy with that. So yeah, even though the quadruple is still on, obviously. But, yeah, so I, you know, you just feel like, because it's so unexpected, because there is such an inexperienced team, that's maybe why it feels better. But to your point about feeling nervous, I mean, I wasn't there. I was only listening to you guys on the radio. But last weekend, I didn't feel nervous either. And yesterday I came in, my partner came in when we were 1-0 down. I was listening to it on the radio and he goes, what's the score? And I said, oh, we're 1-0 down. And he said, oh, no, because he's used to me like having trauma when we're losing. And I was like, yeah, well, and he was like, what's about with you? And I said, well, there's still 20 minutes to go. And then we scored about a minute later. So I don't know, maybe this is a new side of me that that this team is opening up perhaps, but maybe I'm going to get positive. Maybe not just yet.
I think it is. It is a weird feeling. It is weird feeling so comfortable, even at 1-0 down. Like, yeah, we were chasing the game, but we weren't. You know, it wasn't like, quick, hoof it forward. Let's try and get something. It's a weird feeling. But those young players, I think that is a big part of it. And part of me, I don't know if it's just the way I see the situation at the football club as well, it's almost like these players are playing for the future of the actual club.
Yeah.
In a way as well. You know, I said it the other day, I think Charlie Wakefield's goal against Stevenage is, you know, in 20 years' time, we could be looking at that goal the same way we talk about Neil Coates' goal at Hereford. It's, you know, it felt like a massive moment. And while it might not feel massive at this stage, you know, what's to say in a few months' time it's not, you know, a club-saving goal?
Should we book Charlie Wakefield in for an interview in 20 years' time, shall we? So bring him back.
Yeah, he'll still be playing.
Happy as ever. I love interviewing Charlie. It's a joy. And Darren takes the mick out of him, but I think it's great.
Yeah, happy.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's the whole off-field situation aside, these players are just playing for the club, the shirt. There's nothing else about it. It's not like we've got, you know, when we went down from the Football League and we had, you know, hangers on, not really playing for us and not, you know, putting performances in. This is the total opposite situation we've got now. And I think as well, like, I loved the first season under Sal. You know, the second is one to forget about, but we had those players who were winding down. You know, they weren't going to take us to the Football League and then keep us in the Football League, those players. Whereas, you know, if we sneak into the playoffs this year, why not? There's players in there that, you know, are all out of contract. But if we go up, you know, if they're part of that group, then, you know, they're young enough to have a go at the Football League again. And it does, you know, I don't want to compare it to the last time when we got out of the conference, but, you know, that was a young group of players.
Yeah.
That was a tight-knit group who all, you know, lived and breathed playing for Yeovil together. They were all in the area. You know, there are echoes of that with this group. I think, you know, as we've said previously, we just need a Phil Jevons and a Gavin Williams brought in to really press us on a little bit higher up.
Yeah, and the FA Trophy, you know, perhaps if we had lost the game, wouldn't have been that big a deal with the run we're on. But, you know, you get a bit of money, £4,000. It's nothing to be sniffed at. So, you know, you make a run in this competition. We're not going to go too much further in the FA Cup. So why not have an FA Trophy run? And if, you know, you always have a bit of luck, don't you, with injuries, etc., when you push for promotion. So, you know, if we can come out the other side of these Reuben Reid, Mark Little, Joe Quigley injuries, there's no reason you can kind of rotate the five players that you did for the trophy run, because, you know, we've got history in the competition, and Woking certainly have history in the competition, so they'll be disappointed that they're out of it. Well, we're still in it, and it's another great opportunity to get something this season.
I think as big as those players coming back, it's also equally as big to keep hold of Moss, keep hold of Sonny. Because, you know, those two in particular have become pretty key for us. Like, you know, Moss is probably second or third name on the team sheet at the moment. And if we lose him, although we might be bringing back Mark Little, there's no way Mark Little's going to give us what Dan Moss gives us. So, yeah, crucially important that we hold on to Moss and Sonny. And, you know, even Headley might prove, you know, it's only his first game, but he's got a few tough games in front of him to prove a point. And if we can keep hold of him as well, that would be good too.
How many of the quadruple are we going for then? Come on, pick a number between 1 and 4. Ian?
It's going to be at least a treble.
You think? Which three? FA Cup?
Yeah.
Go on, Sheridan, how many are you going for?
Three. Yeah.
Three?
Treble, yeah.
What are you going for, Dave?
I'm going to run. I'm not going to say. One, but I won't tell you which one.
Ruben Reid firing us to the Football League.
In the FA Cup. Yeah, he's going to score in the FA Cup final.
Sheridan, do you need to put a disclaimer that these are not the views of the BBC or something when you say you're going to win the treble?
I mean, if the goals don't count for the Somerset Premier Cup, they don't count in the unbeaten run, and I'm standing by that.
Yeah, everything counts. The Somerset Premier Cup counts for everything. When you said 11, get out of shouting. It's 12. Never forget the miracle of Larkhall. Yeah.
Larson was going, you can't give Addy more goals. You can't give Addy more goals. Yeah. He'll never wake up.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. He'll be in hibernation all the way through, won't he? But yes. So, have we got some questions? Did we get... We asked for questions, didn't we? Did we get any?
Yeah, there are a few there.
Have you got them?
Yeah, I've got them up here.
Go on, then.
Okay. Mr. Tom Newport, he's a friend of mine. Is Reid overvalued in the squad? The game completely changed when he went off today. A lot of experience, but didn't offer anything today.
I'm not going to answer this one. I'm going to leave this one to the two of you, because my opinions on Reuben Reid have already spiralled out of control. Go on then. What do you think, Sheridan?
Look, he didn't have his best game yesterday, but that's his first 60 minutes in 4 or 5 months. I think he's going on the same journey as Adi Youssef, as I said earlier. I think he is big off the pitch for the squad. He is in the changing room every time alongside Mark Little. Him and Little have offered, you know, when we were on that tough run, offered to do some interviews, etc. They're the leaders in the group. I think he is a big player. I want him to score goals, you know, in this next run of games when he gets his match fitness back. Took Adi Youssef for a couple of months. He needs to score goals. He knows that. That's what he's built his career doing. And he should be doing it at this level. But I think the influence he has on the players, it's positive. And I know he's really close with Joe Quigley, so he'll be helping him through that injury spell. But he had a really bad injury. You know, it's been a really tough comeback for him. So I don't think he's overvalued, but I think he is under pressure. This season, he needs to score goals and he needs to up his game in terms of his return, because last season wasn't good enough on the goals front. But I think, as Ian said, that season is just a write-off for everyone. But I'm still hopeful he's going to be a huge player for us. There's no doubt of his talent. There's no doubt that he is, you know, better than this level. But he needs to show it on the pitch. So, yeah, next couple of months really for him are huge.
I think he's a 33-year-old coming back from a hamstring tear. Yeah. You know, it's Michael Owen was a kid when he tore his hamstring, and he was, you know, never the same player after he did it. So I think it's, you know, we have to remember that he's, you know, he is coming towards the end of his career. He's not going to be the Ruben Reed who scored, you know, hatfuls at Plymouth. I think he will score goals, but yeah, we can't, you know, it's his first start. Look, I thought when he came on against Stevenage, he helped us see out that game with his hold-up play.
He really did.
I don't think he's overvalued. I think, like you said, you're closer to, you know, what goes on, you know, on the training ground and things like that. And yeah, I think he's always, like you said, he's always around. I think when I've been over doing stuff for Three Valleys, he's always in the, you know, with all the other players. He's really close to it all. And yeah, a big player. And, you know, I think as well, for me, when we were in pre-season, you know, all his family are there to watch him play as well. And I think that's the other thing that we forget about. We put all these pressure on these players, but, you know, his family goes to watch him play every game and are with him. And it's sort of like, you know, we're a family club at the heart, aren't we? And yeah, I think we can, we should expect more from him, but at the same time, 60 minutes into his first start, give him a bit of a break.
Can I just point out that I don't think Sheridan's opinion of Ruben Reed is any different to mine whatsoever. So if Ben was here, I'd like to think that he would be giving you pelters as well about this opinion of Ben. Although I do notice that in his tweets yesterday, Ben has slipped the word exclusively into his opinion. We will not judge Ruben Reed exclusively on goals, now he said. And I would completely agree with that. I agree that everything that he brings to the game is brilliant. And there was I think Ruben Reed, the bit of last season where I formed this opinion on Ruben Reed, I think when he came in, I don't think he was good enough. And that was because he was getting up to speed. But then he went through a spell. And I remember that game, I think it was at Sutton, because we could all watch him then, because they were all on streams. But he had a brilliant game. I think we lost at Sutton, didn't we? But he had a brilliant game. I think he scored from open play, if I'm not mistaken, and he held the ball up and he linked and he did all of that, which is brilliant. And I don't deny for a second that all of that part of his game is fantastic. But then I think towards the end of the season, or sort of after that little spell that he had in the middle, my frustration with him was that he didn't seem to be doing enough. He wasn't working enough. And yeah, okay, you know, he's an older player and all of that. But he just seemed to like drift out of games a lot and just be completely, you know, isolated. And it just seemed like all it needed was him to do a little bit more, and he could have been in, you know, he could have got that ball. He could have been in that position, but he just seemed to, you know, and this is just me. I mean, what experience do I have in football to judge anybody like Ruben Reid? But there was just that little bit that I felt if he just gave that little bit more, he could have been in those right positions. But also, his goal return last season wasn't good enough. And like you said there, Sheridan, he won't have been happy with his goal return last season as well. So yeah, if he comes back and if he scores goals, I'm more than happy to I'll get a shirt with his name on the back and everything.
I think the pressure Ruben's got is that a few of us who saw him at pre-season, he was a totally different shape, Ruben Reid, and he was, you know, really fit. He was chasing. He was running. He was, you know, he was a different player to the one who finished last season, and it feels like he's probably gone back closer. He's got a lot of work to do to get back to what he came back in pre-season as again. And unfortunately for him, he's got to do it in a very exposed situation because we're short on numbers. He's going to have to do it in games when everyone's watching rather than, yeah, build this up in, you know, a handful of pre-season games and, you know, have a whole summer to rest up. It's very much in the thick of it, on the go, and got to try and prove himself as well as get match fitness. But, you know, hopefully he can do it.
Yeah, I said even when I saw him at Yate, even a big puffer jacket stood at the side of the pitch. They definitely looked a lot less of him than there was last season. So yeah, maybe. Maybe he's got it in it. There's no one more than me that would love to be proved wrong by Ruben Reid. Right, let's move on for that question before I say that gets me into trouble. But Alex Watts, provided all the games go ahead, what's a realistic expectation from Torquay, Weymouth and Torquay? And why is the correct answer 9 points?
Why not?
Why not?
Why not 9 points? Yeah. I completely agree. I think that, you know, COVID depending, all that kind of thing. We are in ridiculous form, best form I've known in years. And, you know, they're sides that are low on confidence. I mean, Torquay crashed out of the FA Trophy yesterday, didn't they? So Weymouth just about secured a win against Hungerford. So, and the way the team approached that, still scarred from it, those two Weymouth games, they know what it means. And as Ian said earlier about playing for the shirt, they know what that match means. They know the crowd's going to be high. They know the expectations after seeing the win finally against the Seagull Botherers. They know what it means.
Not a view of the BBC.
Although I don't think I can attest to have been non-biased in those commentaries, but, you know. So, will we get 9 points? I don't know. Can we get 9 points? Absolutely.
I think that Weymouth game in particular, if you think how differently the context around us playing Weymouth is, you know, on the 28th of December versus when we played them the first time, we were on a shit run. We weren't playing well at all. That was the game the manager decided to change up the tactics and everything. It's a totally different scenario now, and I've got no reason to think we can't get 9 points from these games. You know, Torquay lost to Tunbridge yesterday. I don't know what the situation is with their squad and, you know, what's going on down there, but, you know, Gary Johnson's obviously had a bit of a rebuild over the summer and is still finding out what he's got to do. I don't see any reason. It's not the Torquay we played last year on Boxing Day, for sure, is it?
No, I don't think they're their first choice keeper, I was reading somewhere.
Neither did we.
Torquay didn't.
And, neither did we, well, exactly.
Yeah, he had a bit of a shocker. But yeah, and like you said, Weymouth won at Hungerford, didn't they? But I think they'd lost 5-6 before that, maybe.
They're really struggling going forward as well, which with our defensive record, surely it is a match made in heaven. So, yeah, I mean, their confidence was high when we played them last time, as Ian said, and ours was rock bottom. And it's been the turning point. There's no doubt about it. It's been the turning point, hasn't it?
Yeah. And what do we think is going to happen when Grant Smith meets Brandon Goodchip again?
Anyone ever spoken to Grant Smith? Because he is the most calm, gentle human being I've ever spoken to. So to see that was just utterly... He completely lost it, didn't he? It was so funny. Of all the players that I'd have listed, starting with Jordan Barnett, of course, I never have said that it was Grant Smith who did that. But yeah, that's what the Weymouth Derby does to you.
You need to ask him, what did Brandon Goodchip say to him to make him want to thrust his hips in that fashion?
That's what 120 minutes, penalties, retaken penalties...
In the pissing rain,
in the middle of in the eye of a storm, I think that's enough to break anyone. He hasn't done anything like that since.
No, but
they've all got to have something about him, haven't they?
He's so calm, isn't he? I mean, he couldn't be more different to the keeper we had last season. In Adams. Yeah.
No, you could believe he could do something like that. So other questions we've got. Harry Eaton, which of the current squad is the most avid listener to the podcast? Well, obviously they all listen. So my guess is Yusuf, as he clearly took my last question. This is Harry's last question. Lack of goals in the side personally from his performance today. He does put a laughing face emoji after that. But so Harry claiming credit for adding Yusuf's form. And he also asked this one for you, Ian. Also, when are we getting a live show?
That's Ben.
I was going to say, Ben's not here, and I've never seen Harry Eaton and Ben in the same room together, so I'm wondering whether this might be Ben's alt account that he gets to us through.
I wonder if Harry's any relation to Jason.
It could be, couldn't he? Yeah. I've just noticed as well that his picture is Grant Smith doing the shaggy hops at Brandon Goodchip. So, I don't know, maybe he's Grant Smith's alter ego.
So maybe Grant Smith is the listener of the podcast.
Well, welcome Grant, you're welcome on at any point, but only if you tell us what Brandon Goodchip did to you to deserve that. There must have been something. But the only other questions here are from Hugh, and this one's directed at Ben, I think, asking him about whether he managed to keep peace in the Barrett household after Leeds were the only game on Match of the Day getting thrashed by Arsenal. We won't ask Ian to comment on that one as a closet Arsenal fan. But Ben's not here this morning.
Really reworded this question. Did Ben Barrett manage to disguise enjoyment of a whole Match of the Day dedicated to Leeds scum being trashed so peace in the Barrett household was wisely maintained?
I tried to protect Hugh from the wrath of Mrs. Barrett, but she just come back with some acerbic comment.
It was only 4-1. It wasn't 7-0, was it?
No, yeah, but that is 11 goals in 2 games, isn't it? So
yeah, it literally was. It literally was Match of the Day yesterday, wasn't it? As well,
yeah. It was. Yeah, they were first and last.
Weird. What a weird
time
we're living in. I
noticed you asked Gary Lineker for the running order of Match of the Day as well. So. Don't think he got a response on that one, but
there is a question. I didn't get a program or attempt to get a program, but someone asked why there wasn't a match day program today. I don't know.
Are they doing printed programs? Yeah, still? Yeah, they're back to doing printed programs.
Yeah, they are. Who knows? I mean, it costs a lot to get things printed in volume every week. You know, it was a game where they probably knew we weren't going to have a lot of people there, and it was like 1,500 yesterday. Don't know, you got to weigh up the cost of producing a programme and how many people are going to buy them. When you got kids there, though. I always wanted a programme when I used to go. But, yeah, one of those things.
We don't know the answer to your question.
Yeah, and I don't know if I saw anyone carrying them. I can't remember. Obviously, no. Joe probably tried to get one and couldn't. So
I was going to say, I know Joe from... I grew up in the same village as him down in Odcombe. So I know if anybody knows what happened about programmes, it would be Joe. And he'll also know how many games got called off due to waterlogged pitches in the country. He knows all of that kind of stuff. So if Joe says there was no programme, I guarantee you there was no programme. I have no doubt about that, but... Yeah.
This is 100 people, though. That was more than I thought would be there during the situation. So obviously the Kids Go Free did help, which is positive.
Yeah, and I saw so many kids ask for fivers off their dads and mums to go and get to go and get stuff at half time. So yeah, I think that hopefully the tea bars were bouncing.
Yeah, hopefully. And so all we've got to do now is take on Gary Johnson and Weymouth over the Christmas period. Why is it something about Gary Johnson, even the form that they're in, there's something about Gary Johnson that makes me nervous, about playing Gary Johnson that makes me nervous. Is that my PTSD? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
This is a season like no other.
Yeah? Okay, come
on. It feels positive, Dave. You know.
Yeah.
I'm as glass half empty as you are a lot of the time. But, you know, I think it's, yeah, because when was the last game you went to? I suppose it was the Wrexham, you know, which
was the
pretty,
last game I went to, and that was brilliant.
Pretty special, yeah. So, whereas I've now had three home wins in a row. So, you know, I'm riding on the crest of that wave of witnessing three in a row. You need to go to Torquay, that's an away day.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Torquay on Boxing Day, yeah. That's nowhere, is it?
No.
No, I don't know. Now we've got drawn at home in the FA Cup as well. I can't see, unless I can get myself down to London for Southend in that midweek game, which I think is probably going to be unlikely with COVID, then I think Woking away is my next one. But it's a W team away, so maybe that means something. Because we haven't got Wealdstone away, have we? Or Wealdstone's been rearranged now,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday in February. Just can't wait.
Yeah. Where else would you be on a Tuesday in February?
Who do we want in the trophy? Let's have another local game.
Not Weymouth.
York City, that's who I want.
Plymouth Parkway won on penalties.
Yeah.
Excellent. Did Larkle win?
Yeah, Larkle won. Yeah, I saw
right,
that
wasn't
won.
It? Larkle?
Yeah. Weymouth.
No.
Something
Weymouth in cup competitions.
Something close, so we can have a nice local end of December, start of
January.
What do
you mean something closer? You've had all these games that are close. Give me a break here. Give me Spennymoor United or something like that. York City.
I didn't relocate you to Preston.
No, that's true. It's been a long time. Right. Well, I think that's probably it then.
Yeah, let's call it.
Are we back on Friday, Christmas Eve, Ian? Are we back then?
Yeah, we've got to do a Christmas Eve one, haven't we?
We'll do a Christmas Eve one.
What would Christmas Eve be without the Glovers cast?
Absolutely, yeah. Ben will be bringing the chestnuts and Ian will be roasting them over an open fire.
Is everyone going to be listening to you over there? Christmas dinner? That's going to happen.
What else would you do over your Christmas dinner? Yeah,
I know.
That'll talk to your family.
Yeah, we might be the only people have to listen to on Christmas Day at this rate.
Don't say that. Rightio. Well, apologies again to anyone that can speak Swahili. You know, I tried my best. I did promise. And if it was completely wrong, you can A, let me know, and B, blame Google Translate, because it told me what it was.
Google told me.
Exactly. Google told me to do it. Right.
Thanks. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
Merry
indeed.
Christmas.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Just 6 minutes gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.